One of the silver spaceships led the way while the second one followed after Ray's craft. They descended through the atmosphere of the beige planet and were directed to a landing platform near one of the major cities. Jeff tried to get a look at this, his first proper alien landscape, but there wasn't much to see, just a load of rocks, mountains, and the odd clump of greenery. But over to the extreme right he noticed movement. Far off in the distance, he saw a multitude of bright orange dots, kicking up dust as they moved along. It was a herd of exotic animals, possibly kangaroos. He watched the animals settle for a moment and then bounce along again. Once the ship had settled, he noticed two armed soldiers approaching. They were clad in gleaming gold and silver armour with headgear that looked rather like motorcycle helmets, except for plumes of yellow and white hair that flowed out of the top and went down the back of the soldier. Then he saw the heels. Hallelujah! These soldiers were women. This must be some kind of warrior race, like the Amazons. Either that or a troop of cabaret dancers. Ray pushed the ship's door open and clambered out. Jeff followed, climbing down and out of the ship as calmly as he could. This was scuppered by his abruptly falling over as he took the last step down. So much for impressing the birds, then. He jumped back up, brushing off the dust and acting that nothing had happened. Ray went to his side and whispered out of the corner of his mouth, "Don't make any sudden moves. Just follow my lead." This impressed Jeff. "What, you've got an escape plan?" replied Jeff in the same edge-of-the-mouth whisper. "No, I just don't want to die." Ray thought he had better open the lines of communication. He quickly thought of a few statements such as, "We are a peaceful people, we come in peace," and the good old favourite, "Take me to your leader," but in the end he settled for a more fitting and important demand. "Please don't kill me, please. I'm only a lowly hairdresser. I'm worthless. I'm too young to die." He dropped to his knees to look especially penitent. "Get up," barked the guard. Ray did as he was told, and the two helpless captives were marched briskly to a large doorway, surrounded by what looked like a fortress. The soldier banged three times on the door with the handle of her pistol, and the door clanged and rumbled as it began to slide upwards. As soon as it got to about 6 feet, it stopped, and the prisoners were shoved under it. Up above, in one of the opulent towers, was a throne room. Looking somewhat like a Roman palace, it was draped in silks and the walls were decorated with life-sized statues. Marble pillars at each corner supported the domed roof, where a fantastically intricate and colourful stained glass design let the daylight through. On a raised dais at the far end of the room was a huge throne, as luxuriant and ornate as any other, except it was in a delicate shade of pink. There were feather boas draped around it, and the air had a flowery fragrance to it. Sitting on the throne was a beautiful woman. In fact, to say that she was beautiful was probably an insult. She was easily the most physically perfect woman in the galaxy. Taller than her subjects, finely upholstered in all the right places, but just enough muscle tone to give off the impression that she could kick some serious bottom. Eyes that were blue enough to have been cookie-cuttered out of a summer sky. Her perfect skin bore little makeup except for dark, smoky eyeshadow and glistening lipstick that looked like strawberry jam. Her face was framed by a lush, silvery-white mane of wavy hair, which was decorated sporadically with tiny gold beads and tubes. She was wrapped in a glittering golden toga, which showed off just enough neck, cleavage, leg and calf to drive any red-blooded man wild with desire. To complete the look, she, bizarrely, wore huge, chunky, army-style boots with thick soles. A handmaiden entered from a side door, saluted her queen, and made her report.
Your Majesty, the two trespassers have been captured.
The queen spoke, her voice like sun-dried pie and mash.
Ah, no, sod off.
The handmaiden quickly retreated. The queen watched as the door opened and the two prisoners, now clad in strange white loincloths and nothing else, were sent in. Jeff took one look at the gorgeous vision in front of him and moved his manacled hands down to cover his shame. Ray was one step ahead of him, equally embarrassed to be wearing a nappy. The queen stood up. Although she was on a dais, she would have towered over both men easily. She smiled with an air of superiority briefly before addressing them.
What do you think you're playing at, eh?
The thick Cockney brogue spewed out of her mouth, totally contradicting her elegance and grace.
This is our bleeding patch, all right? No place for you bleeding men. Don't you know who I am?
Oh, hello, said Ray. He accompanied his greeting with a weak grin as if she were a next-door neighbour. I don't believe we've met. I'm Ray Scump, and this is Jeff. Jeff found his tongue at last. Spooner. Jeff Spooner. How's it going, babe? The Queen stepped down from the dais, still towering above them. She walked up to Jeff, whose face was exactly the same height as her chest. It was close enough to sniff. So he did. The Queen slapped Jeff across his cheek, hard. He spun and hit the deck.
Dirty git!
Then she turned to Ray, who whimpered and cowered, covering his face with the manacles. She leaned close to his scrunched-up face.
Scamp! You got a bloody cheek showing your hairy mug round here.
Ray was dumbstruck. Although not as dumbstruck as Jeff, who was literally dumb and struck. He needed answers.
I've never been here before, your worshiptitude. I think you must be mistaking me for... How do you know me?
The Queen returned to her throne. She eyed Jeff, who was still on the floor, and decided whether to get up or not.
On your feet, you bloody wimp.
Jeff got up quickly, rubbing his red cheek.
I know you, mate, because of what your old man did. I don't know who that muppet is, but your daddy declared war on all of us here.
Ray was totally confused.
I don't understand, your highnessness. My father was a humble hairdresser, just like me. I'm sure he never declared anything on anyone.
The Queen glared at both of the nappy-clad men.
Does the name Bakerloo mean anything to you?
Ray shook his head dumbly. So did Jeff.
Michelle Bakerloo?
Ray's face visibly changed from confusion to surprise in an instant.
Michelle Bakerloo? Shelley Bakerloo? Well, I have heard of her, actually. She used to go out with my dad just after my parents divorced.
Finally, they were getting somewhere.
Did you know her then?
The Queen glared once again, but kept her temper.
You could say that. What do you know about her?
Ray relaxed a bit. He began to pace around as he talked, which frightened Jeff a bit.
Shelley Bakerloo! My dad met her when he was hairdressing for a living. She was a bit younger than him, but they got together and went out for a while. Gorgeous-looking woman, by all accounts. Pretty as a picture, but really vain. Hard work with Shelley. Then it went a bit pear-shaped. She was trying to make it as a model and went to him for a top-notch hairdo. Unfortunately, he got nervous and overdid the peroxide. All her hair fell out, and it never grew back. Well, suffice to say, he dumped her. She freaked out and went off across the galaxy. Nobody ever saw her again. Dad couldn't handle being with a baldy, I suppose.
At this point, the Queen strode straight up to Ray and grabbed him by his goatee. Ray squealed in pain as she pulled him close to her face.
Got it in one, mate. Who'd want to be seen with a bird who looked like that? A bird who looked like this?
She ripped off her silvery locks and threw them to one side. Her hairless scalp shone in the sunlight.
Ray, I think she's Shelley Bakerloo.
The Queen raised an eyebrow.
Quick, innit? Queen Shelley, ruler of the Slogs of Profania to you, mate.
The still bald and, frankly, still beautiful monarch walked over to Geoff, who began to flinch and twitch uncontrollably, as he was expecting another slap or possibly much worse.
Okay, babe. You're a big, strong man. I'm going to make you a deal.
What kind of deal?
Glad you asked. I could, should and would have both of you executed immediately, but I think I can make some use of you.
Geoff decided not to try either charm or wit again. What? Queen Shelley stopped pacing when she got to Geoff. Once again he flinched, which made her smile.
Here's the deal. You do me a favour and spend the rest of your useless lives as eunuchs, serving me around here, or you can refuse to help and end up as heads on sticks outside the palace. Your choice.
Admittedly, it wasn't much of a choice. Ray stepped forward, gathering all the courage he had, which wasn't much.
Take me, your wondrousness, not Geoff. He's just an innocent. Let me do your bidding.
Oh, no, scump,
said the Queen, shaking her hairless bonce.
Why make one of you suffer when both of you's much more fun?
Later that evening, Geoff and Ray were escorted back to the throne room. Queen Shelley had chosen a new wig, a lilac afro number, but still managed to look utterly glamorous.
All right, fellas, this is the deal. Find something for me, bring it back, and we call it quits. What do you reckon?
Geoff stepped forward. Find what exactly? The Holy Grail or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, fantastic. What is it then? The Queen raised her hand and snapped her fingers. A lowly maiden hurried up and handed her a small flat box, rather like a slate blackboard. It had a screen on the front and two control knobs at the lower corners. Geoff wondered what she was going to attempt to draw with the etching toy. She handed it to Ray, and the screen displayed some information, maps, and graphics.
Have a butcher's at this. We know it's around here, and we know it's somewhere in your territory. They nicked it from us yonks ago, and it's up to you two to get your hands on it and bring it back to me, and then I'll give you anything you want. Deal?
Geoff's dormant libido suddenly woke up. Anything? Shelley cottoned on to his lewd intentions and brought herself far too close to him. She brought her silvery, glittery lips to within microns of Geoff's trembling cake hole and breathed,
"Anything."
Geoff found himself nodding enthusiastically. "You got yourself a deal, your hottiness? Come on, Ray, let's go raid some tombs." Taking Ray by the arm and dragging him away, despite his feeble protests, Geoff bounded out of the hall and down the corridor. Queen Shelley looked at her handmaiden, still humbly standing at her side.
"You know, even though he's tiny, he could probably do me a bit of good, you know what I mean?"
The handmaiden asked for clarification.
"You mean you actually like him, Your Majesty?" "Nah, not like that. I'm going to enjoy eating him with chips. Stick the fryer on."
After a bath, a decent meal of weird orange-coloured steaks and a change of clothing, Geoff and Ray were led out of the palace and stood at the front gate. A gigantic portcullis was raised, and the voice of Queen Shelley came from internal speakers.
"Good luck, fellas, and come back in one piece, Geoffrey. I've got plans for you, Sonny Jim."
This made Geoff feel special. He'd never pulled such a gorgeous woman before, and this one was royalty. Result! The thought of living it up in a kingdom of subservient totty really appealed to him. Well, it did, until Ray, being the intergalactic know-all and on this occasion spoilsport, explained what plans were being made for him upon his return.
"You what? Eat me?"
"Oh, yes.
You'll get your lusty little pleasures first, of course. I dare say it'll last for the best part of 10 hours. But after that, it's dinner time and Jeff's on the menu.
Jeff couldn't believe it. Say that again.
You'll be on the menu.
Jeff shook his head. No. Did you say 10 hours?
Fantastic!
He grinned the grin of a crazy person. Ray hung his head in despair. They began their journey, kicking up dusty clouds, and wandered off into the direction of the sunset. Ray looked over to his comrade.
If we could make our way back to the palace under cover of night, maybe we could overpower some of the guards and escape this place.
Jeff mulled it over.
Nah, it'll take us all night just to get back, and we'd be so knackered the guards would mash us to a pulp without a fight.
You're probably right.
Mind you, if the Queen fancies me, I might get off without the beating and move straight on to the Lurving.
He grinned. This made Ray frown.
You'll still be served up with chips later, though, in places where chips shouldn't go. Big chips. Crinkle cut. Or had you forgotten that part?
Oh, yeah, said Jeff, as his heart flushed like a toilet, any remaining thoughts of Lurving quickly draining away. I hate your dad, Ray. Nightfall closed in on the dusty plain like a velvet tablecloth, shrouding all in dense blackness. As there were no major cities to illuminate the horizon nor streetlights, the stars were the only source of light. Pin-sharp and twinkling, they gazed upon the two lost souls. The two lost souls gazed back. They had found a small hill, at the base of which lay a number of huge boulders. The boulders sat in an almost perfect semicircle, ideal for shelter from the dust-laden winds. Both Jeff and Ray lay on their backs and looked up at the stars. Even Jeff had to admit that he was feeling a little homesick. Not for Earth, but just to be out there, flitting carefree and cavalier among the infinite planets. He made a concerted effort to try and get some sleep, curling up fetus-like against a large rock. Ray couldn't get comfortable. For some bizarre reason, the thought of being violated, skinned, and devoured by attractive, over-evolved cannibals wasn't conducive to a good night's rest. He looked around for a weapon of some sort, so that in the event of the ambush he might defend himself and his friend. Picking up a nearby stick, he swished it to and fro a couple of times, and then, noticing that it was 4 inches in length, dropped it with a whimper of despair. Looking over at Jeff snoring away, he noticed a faint blue glow near his leg. He walked over and gently took out the digital slate that the Queen had given him. It occurred to him that he hadn't even been told what it was they were sent out to find. Somewhere in the recesses of Jeff Spooner's sleeping synapses, Kylie danced for him. He found himself seated in the front row of a deserted theatre, where the delectable Miss Minogue was treating him to a private pole dance, in which the diminutive Antipodean saucepot swung, shimmied and twisted her lithe frame around a highly polished chrome pole. Just as the dance was coming to its wonderfully raunchy end, the scene painfully exploded into a million stars, and Jeff felt a dull ache at the back of his skull. He awoke to find Ray squatting in front of him, holding the digital pad. "Ow!" cried Jeff, suddenly putting two and two together. Ray looked hard at him. "You idiot! You know what you've done, don't you? You've sentenced us to death!" Jeff sat up, rubbing his freshly bashed bonce. "What are you on about?" he asked, genuinely in the dark, both literally and figuratively. Ray brandished the pad in front of Jeff's face so that he could see the diagrams on the screen. "This," he admonished, "is the fabled universal remote." Jeff looked at it the only way he knew how, dumbly. "So?" he replied, equally dumbly.
Ray bashed him on the head again with the pad. "It's fabled, Jeff.
mythological. It's never been found and it never will. To most sentient species in the universe, it never even existed. So, what you're saying is we don't have much of a chance to find this thing, then? He flinched as Ray waggled the pad again in a threatening manner. Well done, Einstein. Jeff looked up at his barber friend sulkily. You don't have to keep twatting me with that thing. Across the galaxy, young Kelvin, newly appointed evil overlord of the Scrag Empire, took his father's throne for the first time. It was a magnificent chair, assembled entirely of bones and skulls of vanquished enemies and lovingly coated in gold, silver and ebony. Unfortunately, where it previously did a good job of accentuating the sinister presence of Lord Rancid, it had the opposite effect on Kelvin, dwarfing him and making him look like a small doll within its bony embrace. He'd been in office now for just over an hour and already hated it. On a regular basis, peasants and various military leaders were brought in front of him, and all he had to do was give the thumbs down, and they got carried off and thrown into the razor crab tanks. It was boring and repetitive. And as he hadn't inherited Dad's lust for blood, it wasn't even any fun to watch. He'd rather be watching the cartoons on telly, but was advised by his dark ministers that such behaviour was unbecoming of the evil overlord. The doors to his throne room swung open, and a trio of suited, balding men with briefcases walked in, a little hesitantly.
My lord, we are here to pay tribute to your late father and also to ensure the fiscal stability of your reign, which we humbly wish to be as long and fruitful as that of...
Silence! Interrupted Kelvin. Being the most feared man in the galaxy had its plus points. One didn't have to be concerned with manners, small talk, and most of all, sycophantic waffling bean counters. Looking down at the arm of his throne, he noticed a small, round button with a skull engraved into it. Things just got interesting.
Tell me, how is the company doing?
One of the trio of pinstriped lackeys stepped forward, opening his briefcase.
My lord, the Empire is uniquely positioned to reap enlarged and substantial financial rewards in the next quarter. Further to that, exports and imports are steadily providing additional monetary stability.
He went on for at least another minute in vague multisyllabic prose until Kelvin had completely lost track of the sentence's original subject.
Silence!
He pressed the button on his chair and instantly the man was turned to grey dust with a bright flash. Pointing at one of the other taxmen, he tried again.
You, tell me, are we making money? And try to be concise for Bod's sake.
The stuttering man, still dusted with the ashes of his late colleague, tried to explain to the best of his ability, but when you're a scholar of the finest mathematical teaching and faced with a patienceless, ruthless and quite frankly clueless dictator, there's always going to be a little language barrier.
My lord, shares are up and are set to flourish annually, developing into a considerable...
Silence!
Another flash, another pile of dust. It wasn't going well. The last of the accountants realised it was up to him to provide a clear answer.
My lord, he began, shaking visibly, you're loaded. Filthy rich, to be honest.
Kelvin smiled. Finally, someone was talking in a language he understood.
What can I afford?
He asked, rubbing a pair of sweaty palms together in greedy anticipation of the answer.
Anything,
replied the little man, mopping his perspiring brow with a handkerchief, allowing himself a little smile of relief.
Anything? Asked Kelvin. What about a house? No, wait a minute. A city, a country. Can I buy a country?
He asked, frothing over with excitement.
My lord, you can buy planets.
entire systems if you desire. The accountant was getting more confident. All he had to do was remember to translate his thoughts into a more readily understandable dialogue, and things would go swimmingly. Kelvin bounced up and down in his throne in the manner of a young child approaching the seaside in their parents' car. Oh, I want one. How do I go about it, then? He gushed. Well, first you need to release the considerable equity withheld in your portfolio.
Silence!
Flash. Bang. Dust. Silence. Kelvin sat back in his chair. This dictator lark wasn't as bad as he first thought it'd be. The son of Profania finally saw fit to crawl up above the horizon. As Ray and Jeff, newly appointed artifact hunters, walked along the desert trail, Ray read up on their quest, using the slate-like computer that the Queen had provided them with. Oh, it says here, began the sweating tonsorial trimmer, that for over 100 generations the Slargs have been searching for the universal remote, literally a remote control for the universe. Jeff was listlessly booting a pebble along the trail, only half listening. Ray went on regardless. Apparently, whoever holds this thing has control of the universe's workings, literally. You know, my father once told me about this. He said it's the thing that empowered the most advanced races to create, to destroy, conquer, alter space and time. Jeff took an almighty punt with his foot, and the pebble flew off the trail. He looked at Ray. What? So you're saying that this thing is like a magic wand or something?
Yeah, either that or an atom bomb.
Where are we supposed to find this thing, anyway? We've been walking for hours. His adventurous enthusiasm was beginning to wane.
Well, we've followed the map so far, we should be entering Yob territory any time now. I've heard that these Yobs make the Slargs look like children's TV presenters by comparison.
The two weary travellers reached a narrow pass between two towering mountains. Jeff stopped to drink at a small pool of water that had gathered in the shade of the rocks. It was a bit warm, but it refreshed him suitably. He hadn't slept all that well and was still tired. For a non-believer, Ray certainly seemed to be more enthusiastic this morning about finding the lost artifact. Perhaps because it would make them both famous, but more likely because it would just allow him to get home at last.
Oh, this is the gateway to the village of the Yobs, proclaimed Ray.
In the dusty haze, he could make out a wide plain dotted with crude wooden huts that resembled bonfires. Right in the centre of the village was a tall, thin tree that must have been at least 100 feet in height. You said these Yobs are dangerous, said Jeff, looking for signs of life among the huts. Ray stroked his goatee, trying to look deep and thoughtful.
Well, that, my friend, is an understatement. In fact, I'd go so far as to say you will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. Well, except for Swansea.
Well, firstly, how do we get in there to look for this non-existent thing? And secondly, how do we escape without being killed in the process?
I'm not sure, to be honest, replied Ray, still trying to retain some dignity.
Well, that's just brilliant. We're naffed before we start, then, exclaimed Jeff in a fit of newly generated despair. Ray turned to Jeff, looking annoyed.
Don't put the blame onto me. You're the one who thinks with his Johnson and decided to go on this quest. You try and think of something.
Jeff had to admit that it was mostly his Johnson's fault, and the guilty expression he wore showed it. Well, I suppose we'll just have to improvise, then. Make it up as we go. Otherwise, we'll never find the remote. Just then, a scratching, scuffling noise came out of the rocks. Both Jeff and Ray heard it and looked at each other in fear. They had been discovered.
Overlord Kelvin sat in his throne room, bored, rigid. To pass the time, he'd surveyed his lands and made some laws and raised taxes. Twice. That had been fun. But now he was feeling a bit jaded. The throne room door swung open,
making him scream in shock. It wasn't conduct becoming the new overlord of the Empire. Standing at the doorway were another group of bureaucrats. Only this time, they didn't look afraid of Kelvin in the slightest. Because they weren't. This was no ordinary group of bean counters. They were galactic tax inspectors, ready to do a complete audit of the Scrag Empire and put to right any wrongs they found in the process. That included deposing and replacing the Overlord if need be. They weren't to be messed with. Kelvin knew this. It wasn't the first time he'd seen these imposing, sinister men. He'd heard tales of their previous visits to his father, and knew that it was only these men that could make his dad look afraid. The tax inspectors stepped into the room, and Kelvin scampered back to his throne as fast as he could, trying to regain his regal composure when he got there. One of the men spoke, a rasping, emotionless hiss.
Overlord of Scrag, we come to perform a full inspection of your empire. We wish to know all that you have planned for the coming financial century.
Kelvin thought as fast as his noodle would allow. Coughing a little to clear his dry throat, he began to stall for time.
In the coming months, I plan to expand. Expand the Empire by conquering, yes. Yes, conquering those worlds nearest to us that need to be, conquered, I suppose.
Is that it?
Well, no. I plan to do more, of course,
He was beginning to crack up under the pressure of the unblinking, beady eyes focused on him. He had to think big, bigger, biggest, if entirely possible.
Conquering the entire universe, he declared loudly, standing up in his most noble pose, looking out into the middle distance.
It had the desired effect. Kelvin heard a faint gasp of astonishment emanate from one of the inspectors.
If that's all right with you chaps?
The lead inspector looked suitably impressed.
Excellent. I assume then that you possess the universal remote control.
He watched as Kelvin's previously confident expression gave way to befuddlement.
Yes, I do. And I plan to rule the universe with an iron fist, mightier than that of my father. He may have been a great ruler, but I promise you this. The universe will cower in terror at the very thought of me.
The inspectors looked at each other speechlessly. They filed out the door, and Kelvin ran over to his throne. Pushing the communicator button, he leaned into the microphone.
Get me the royal advisors. Pronto!